Hi there, Duke fans. Welcome to episode 520 of the Duke Basketball Roundup. I am joined this morning. Actually, it's not the morning. It's the afternoon. I don't even know what time of day it is.
It's morning somewhere.
There you go. I'm Jason Evans, and I'm joined by Donald Wine. Donald, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. First of all, great show that you guys had with Jay Billis last time around. I really always enjoyed Jay Billis in his perspective, but that was a very cool conversation. I'm glad we get to do it again this time around.
Exactly. Donald has teed up what is coming next. We promised it last time that we were going to be talking with Jay Billis about Derek Lively. We spoke to him earlier about Dariq Whitehead. This is our conversation coming up, a conversation that Sam and I had a couple days ago, just full honesty, obviously. But Donald's going to join me to chime in about it once it's all done. But for now, have a listen here as Jay Billis talks to us about Derek Lively, and stick around because he's also going to talk about Victor Wembanyama. So once again, we are joined by ESPN's NBA draft guru, Jay Billis. Jay, thanks a lot for joining us here on the Duke Basketball Roundup.
Thank you for having me. It's always my pleasure.
Yeah. So a couple days ago, we chatted with you about Dariq Whitehead. I want to turn now to Derek Lively, Duke's other guy in the draft, and the guy who probably has the superior draft stocks, so to speak. You know, it was a year ago that Duke had Mark Williams's rim protection and lob threat that turned him into almost a lottery pick, right on the fringe of the lottery. And this year, we have Derek Lively playing a pretty similar role at Duke, being a terror in the middle on defense and not having a huge role on offense. You know, Derek Lively was pretty content to only take like open dunks. His usage rate this year was 12%. Which is phenomenally low. What do NBA evaluators see when they look at his game? Are they only enthralled by the defense, or do they think there's potential there on the offense?
They see both. So with Derek Lively, the second, you've got a 7-foot superior athlete that can run. He's unbelievably long. He's got a wingspan of like 7'8". And he can block and change a lot of shots around the rim. He's an impact defender. He's a solid rebounder. I think he can actually improve in that area as he gets stronger. But he can really run. So his as a rim runner, shot blocker, rebounder, he's got tremendous value with that alone. You know, in the NBA, they're looking for elite level skill. And he's got an NBA skill of rim protection and rim running. And I think you mentioned lob threat. He's a lob threat. So he can put pressure on the rim that way. His offense is behind. And part of the reason is he had some injuries, just like Dariq Whitehead did, and didn't, you know, get off to a great start. And I think his confidence was affected. And yeah, anytime you're if he was ranked as the sixth best prospect coming out of high school, I think he would have taken less criticism with his sort of the early start. But when you're number one, there's a bigger target, bigger expectation, stuff like that. And you always have to, like, I got phone calls from colleagues of mine saying he's the number one player. And I go, he's really good. Like, give him a little time here. You know, it's not a final grade midway through the season. But he handled that pretty well. I know it wasn't easy, especially at that age when you're 19 years old, to take that kind of criticism that, you know, where is this number one player we've all been talking about? We had all this anticipation for, because, you know, a lot of people didn't see him in high school. But he's very, very talented. And you know, I think some of what he's shown in workouts and the things he's been doing since the season ended, I think help project him as an offensive player that is going to get better and better. Mark Williams was ahead when he came out, but he had also had another year. So if you project Derek Lively out another year, he's going to look a lot different than he did last year. And that's sort of what this game is about, is trying to peg not who he is, but where he's going to be. And, you know, look, you can go back to, say, Grant Hill. After Grant Hill's freshman year, they would have said, we can't shoot. And they didn't say that after his senior year. You know, he improved that tremendously. And his first 7 years in the league before he got injured, his performance was up with the greatest of all time. And had he stayed healthy, he would have been, and I think he still is. Like I refer to him as a Sandy Koufax of basketball. But his 7 years before he was injured were just like Sandy Koufax. The numbers were astronomical and were matched only by the, you know, Mount Rushmore players, you know, Jordan, Bird, West, stuff like that, Oscar, you name it. Ridiculous numbers. And I'm not saying Derek Lively and Grant Hill are the same. I'm just using that as an example that you look at him as a freshman and you're going, well, he can't do this. He can't do, they can't shoot. And Lively, you'd say right now he's got no offense, but that doesn't mean he's going to have no offense in another year or two. That doesn't mean he's going to be Kareem, but it means he's going to be a hell of a lot better than he is now. And he's got that sort of ability level, and he wasn't ranked number one for no reason. He's very talented and he's got a great future ahead of him. The fact that he didn't realize upon it in his freshman year, you know, you don't take a discount on that. I mean, he could be taken in the top 10 in this draft. That's the kind of potential that he has. And what I would say is like the ceiling is pretty high for him, and the floor is established. You know, it's his floor. If he does nothing else, his rim protection, running the floor, lob threat, all that, because he's a terror around the rim. You know, heck, what he did against North Carolina in you know, what he blocked 10 shots. I don't remember what it was, but he was a terror in that game. And that's not that wasn't unusual for him. You know, maybe the 10 was, but not the. Not the high impact on the defensive end, and so he's gonna do. I think that floor being established there is very attractive.
You know, you mentioned, you know, the floor of being a great defender. It wasn't just his rim protection. Just, you know, from my perspective, I saw a guy who, when he got switched onto smaller players, he was not outmatched. I mean, one of the things with, you know, we talked about Mark Williams a little bit. When Mark Williams would get switched onto guards, that was a problem for Duke. When Derek Lively would get switched onto guards, that was a problem for the guard.
Yeah.
What do you think Lively's potential is in the NBA? Are we talking about a guy who could someday be Defensive Player of the Year?
It's possible, absolutely. Because that's a good point. Like, when he does get into screen and roll situations, you can switch, you can guard for a couple dribbles, and because of his lateral mobility and his quickness, you know, he can guard for a couple dribbles, and with his length, he can recover and bother some things. So that's a big factor. He's not a stiff, you know, sort of 7 feet. He's a lithe athlete that can move, and he can move laterally. He's got really good feet, you know, and I think he's going to get bigger and stronger. He's not going to turn into, you know, Artis Gilmore size wise, but you don't want him to do that. He didn't need to do that. It's not a low post game anymore where you get into, you know, aircraft carrier battles down on the low block. That's not the way the game's played anymore. So his mobility is a big factor and another attractive piece.
So let's get back to his offense then for a moment, because there was talk when he was in high school and like in the preseason at Duke that Derek Lively might be a legitimate threat from the three-point line. I know there were a lot of Duke fans like salivating over that. Never really emerged. I mean, he was 2 of 13 on three-pointers this past season for Duke. That's not a good percentage and that's not good volume. But I've seen some footage from his NBA workouts. It seems like he looks pretty comfortable shooting from outside. Does the league think, you know, when you talk to people, you know, around the NBA who are looking at this draft, do they think that Derek Lively projects as someone who might have a three-pointer threat when he's in the NBA?
I think there it has opened some eyes that he's got the capability to develop there. But it goes back to the ceiling floor that he has shown in a lot of these workouts that he's got that capability. it's not a definite because it has to be done in 5-on-5 games. But it goes back to the floor thing. The floor is so high, it's not a risk. You know, if he develops it, great. If he doesn't, look at all these other things he does that help you win. Like one of the players that, you know, I told you last time, I'm not very good at comparisons. I don't hate them. I'm just not very good at them. But I think back to when DeAndre Jordan came out of Texas A&M. And now he was a second round pick, and look, he's still in the league, and he's been playing forever. But one of the things I thought was he has no offense, and look how productive his career has been.
Oh yeah.
And you know, you go back and say, okay, he should have been drafted much higher. That's sort of the difficulty of the draft, as I was saying in our last time together. And I look at Lively the same way as DeAndre Jordan. If he doesn't develop it, you know, that's a bummer, but look at all the other things he does that are going to help you win.
Now, Lively just turned 19 a few months ago. What do you think his timeline is? You talked earlier about, oh, you know, Mark Williams had that extra year. Where do you think Lively's timeline is of being an impact player in the NBA? Is it immediate or is it a few years?
I think it's immediate on the defensive side and the rim run side, the lob side, all that stuff. I think that stuff's immediate. The offense may take a while. I don't know. And that's sort of the thing about this. It's just, there's a lot of, I don't know with some of these guys, and Lively's one of them. But you're, you know, sort of betting on the come on this. Like I think he's going to do really well, and I think he's going to develop this stuff, but you know, I wish I knew that stuff. Nobody knows.
You'd be a GM if you did.
Yeah, well, you know, but GMs don't know either. I mean, you know, how many guys passed on Nikola Jokic? You know, he went 41st in the draft. Nobody knew. They could say they did, but nobody knew that they were going to get this. And similar, you know, similar with a guy like Lively, but Lively, you do know, or at least, you know, really believe that he can, the things we've talked about that he does really well defensively, athletically, length, lobs, all that stuff. That foundation, that floor is pretty darn good.
Jay, I know you don't like to peg specific spots for players, but you know, I was sort of thinking over under like the lottery, like, you know, top 14 or not in the top 14. You know, where do you think Derek Lively ends up going?
I had him 10 to 20. And I know that's pretty wide range, but I think there's a very good chance he goes between 10 and 15 that he'll be in the lottery.
All right. I want to move really quickly to some other stuff about the NBA draft, because we got to talk about the guy who's going to go number one, Victor Wembanyama. The hype train here is unlike anything we've seen in a generation. I mean, I remember the drafts when Zion Williamson and Anthony Davis came out, and those guys, you know, like no-brainer, absolutely number one, going to be game-changing players. Those guys would go number two if they were the same draft with Victor Wembanyama, right?
Yes. Oh, they would absolutely go number two.
So, do you believe he's the best prospect since LeBron James?
Yes. Yes. And this is the question I've asked of myself, and I don't have an answer for this one. So I saw LeBron James when he was a sophomore in high school, and I was blown away. I'd never seen a player like that at that age. It almost didn't make sense. He was so talented and so good. And, you know, he was, you know, just as skilled as Kobe Bryant was or Kevin Garnett was coming out of high school, but he was so much more physically imposing. And you know, he had everything. So it was, talk about no brainer. But if you had Victor, if you moved 18-year-old LeBron, and if you could, I know it's difficult to do, but if you could dismiss what he did after being 18.
Right. Just knowing him as a prospect, you mean?
Yes. Prospect only. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because if you said, okay, you could have LeBron knowing he'd be 38 years old doing all this for all this time, or Victor, yeah, you take
top
the bird
two
in the
all
hand.
Time.
Yeah, I'm going to take LeBron because, yeah, I know what I'm getting. That would be kind of easy. But if you had them both at 18 side by side in the same draft, not knowing what's coming, but just on your belief and today's game, you'd go, that's a hard choice. Like, you may take Victor number one. That's how good he is as a prospect. And, you know, if, and I'm, you know, maybe we all are, we're old enough to be able to make this comparison. Some of the young people look at you and go, what are you talking about? If Ralph Sampson were born 20 years ago, I think that's the comparison I would have for Victor. That's, you know, when we were brought up, and Ralph's only a few years older than me, it was, you'd go to practice and, you know, they would say, all right, big guys down here, guards down here. And the big guys would work on back to the basket stuff. But Victor was not raised that way. He was raised to play a floor game and raised basically to be a perimeter player, guard. You know, it's not that he can't operate in the post, but he would operate, you know, a step or two out, and he can shoot it, man. He shoots like 84% from the free throw line. And that's a pretty good indicator that the guy can shoot it. Now, he's not a prolific three-point shooter right now. He shoots around 30%, but his fluidity, he's got like an 8-foot wingspan, and his mobility at that size is ridiculous. He's not shown any injury issues. He's been raised to be a professional athlete. He does all kinds of things that are next level in preparing his body and all that stuff. He's a joke. And the only question mark, reasonable question mark you could have about him is two. One, durability, which he's shown no issue with. There's you can't point to, well, he missed all this time injured, or he's got this problem, or that. There's no discussion about that.
And he was playing against grown men in that French league. Yeah, it wasn't like playing against high school or college guys. He was playing against men.
Yeah. And but a lot of these college guys are men too. But yeah, that's a fair point. But he played in the same division as Rudy Gobert. And Rudy Gobert in, I think it was 27 games. And for Wembanyama, it wound up being 34. He blocked like 50 more shots than Gobert did. That's a pretty fair indicator that the guy can operate. But you know, all you have to do, it's I don't know how to say it, but we can sit and list all the things that he can do. And it's a long list. But it would be like us saying, well, let's break down Usain Bolt. You know, Matt, how quick does he get out of the blocks? And what's his closing speed? And his form, but after you watch him run, you're going, what are we talking about? There's nothing to talk about here. And I feel kind of the same way about Victor, just like I did with LeBron. But I felt similarly about Anthony Davis too. Like, it's not a discussion point. But if you had Anthony Davis and Victor in the same draft, you would take Victor. I think most people would, if not all.
All right, I've got a silly exercise I want you to do, which is obvious. I don't think anybody's calling San Antonio. I don't think San Antonio is answering the phone for anyone who wants to talk about trading for that number one pick. But let's do a silly exercise. Talk to me. Are there players that San Antonio would trade that number one pick for? Kevin Durant, Giannis, Jason Tatum, Luka Doncic. Would they trade it for someone like that, or are they so sure that Wembanyama is going to be great that there's like no one in the NBA? I'm saying players right now that you would trade that pick for.
It's hard to imagine that Milwaukee would give up Giannis,
right?
So it's. I get your point, but it's hard to even wrap my head around what kind of offer you could get to give that up. Like, what would you have given up in 2003 for the rights to LeBron? I can't imagine giving that up. I'm sure there's something, but it would have to be an incredibly impressive package, because you're looking at a player that, barring injury, it has transformational ability. Like, you know, I only remember saying this about, or thinking this and saying it about LeBron one, a little bit with Zion, because I had never seen anything like that on a basketball floor. Like, he's unique. There's never been a player like Zion on a basketball floor. But similarly, there's never been a player like Victor. he's a rarity that that I don't think has a comparison. There's no comp for this guy. And maybe we'll see more of him in the future with the way the game has changed. But I can't think of, you know, a 7'4" guy that can do the things that he can do. There's just not one.
Yeah.
And so when you have that in front of you, you'd have to give up a lot to get it, or you'd have to get a lot to give that up.
So what's his timeline, you think? Is he going to be a starter on day one? You know, how good do you think he'll be? Is it mostly going to be on defense, or is he also going to be good on offense from day one? You know, just give me, you know, probably going to be rookie of the year, but I mean, are we talking about a guy who's going to be an all-star level from day one?
He's got that potential. I don't know. Like, the rookie of the year thing usually goes to the one that scores the most points and all that stuff. And sometimes the rookie of the year goes to a guy that's playing on a bad team and stuff like that. You know, Doncic was ready right away. I think Victor's going to be ready right away to make a major impact. Does that mean he averages 25 and 12 and, you know, four blocks or something? I have no idea what the numbers will be. And he'll have games where he doesn't look good, and he'll have games where he looks amazing, because he's still going to be a rookie in the NBA. But, you know, when we were younger, like when I came out of college, they drafted nothing but 22-year-olds. And they were called rookies that had a lot to learn.
Yeah.
And now if you're 22, they're like, look at this old man. He's already shown everything he's got. I never understood that. I still don't understand it. Because, you know, 22, you still got a long runway ahead of you, not as long as when you're 18. But, I don't have any doubts about Victor.
Let me move to the guy who I guess maybe probably the second pick, Scoot Henderson. Because he's another player that people are super excited about. I mean, you know, I talked about no one's calling San Antonio, but everybody is calling Charlotte to see if they're willing to move the number two pick. What do people see in him that is really impressive? Because just from a statistical standpoint, like I looked at his three-point shooting. I mean, guards need to be good shooters from the outside in the modern NBA. Scoot Henderson, he hit 21% and 32% from three in his two G League seasons. So it's not his outside shooting. What are people so excited about him?
He's really dynamic, super athletic. He's got great length. He's only like 6'2 or so, but his length is of a 6'9 guy. So his arms go forever, and he's unbelievably competitive. You know, when he takes the ball to the basket, he goes to dunk. He makes dynamic plays, and he's a playmaking guard. He's a really good passer. His numbers as in the G League were, from offensive rating to assists, you name it. He was more productive and better in those categories than the kid that went to, I'm forgetting his name now, that went to Houston a few years ago. He can play. And, I think it'll be a tough choice though, between Scoot Henderson and Brandon Miller. Because Brandon Miller's 6'9", and he can really shoot it. He may be the best shooter in the draft. He and Bryce Sensabaugh are two of the best from Ohio State, are two of the best shooters, maybe the two best. And so Miller's got a ton of upside, and he's bigger, and he's a little bit better defensively. But the shooting piece, I think, is you're not questioning that with Miller in a league that really values shooting, and rightfully so. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Henderson go number three, but he could go number two, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Miller go to Charlotte at two.
Jay, we want to thank you so much for giving us all your insight in the draft, and we will see you Thursday on the broadcast.
Looking forward to it. My one day of the year, bladder management, 6 hours without going to the men's room.
How many drinks do you have a cup there of water to keep your throat parched or what?
It's usually coffee, because it's a long week. But, you know, as you get older, this is becoming an issue. It wasn't a problem the first, you know, 10, 15 years, but the last five or six, I've had to go, you know, I better not
aren't
have
aren't
that.
You behind the desk the whole time? Can't they hook you up somehow?
That, yeah, I going back to the movie, what was it, Semi-Tough, with Burt Reynolds and Chris Gustafsson, yeah, when they had to go through that S training. Yeah, maybe I should have, maybe I should look into that. But I've been pretty good so far. But
we send people to space. We can't have you go to the bathroom during the draft. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm sure I could leave the desk at some point, but the draft moves pretty quick. You know, I don't know how the football guys do it. You know, they're there for 3 days.
Jay, thanks a lot, man. We appreciate it, buddy, always.
Jay.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye. So we're back from the break now, and again, we want to thank Jay Billis for providing all that insight. By the way, folks, in just a couple days, Jay will be the ESPN analyst hosting the NBA draft. We, you know, here on the DBR podcast, we don't go for the also-rans. We get the guys who are the main hosts, the big time players. And Jay Billis is that when it comes to draft and analysis. Donald, you didn't get to take part in the conversation, but you've listened to it now. You know, what are your big takeaways from what Jay had to say about Derek Lively?
Well, I'm glad that he agrees with me in the fact that a lot of teams are going to be enamored by his defense. You know, Derek Lively and Jason, we were kind of talking about this before the show offline, but defense is kind of something that the NBA as a whole has kind of decided they can't really teach. They can teach offense. They can develop offense, but it's very hard to develop someone who is a mediocre defender into an elite defender. So they're going after guys now, especially some of these teams towards the back half of the first round. They're going for guys that, hey, we already got all the offense in the world, but we need the defensive complements. And I think that is where Derek Lively is kind of thriving a little bit as far as a first round prospect. But also, Jason, I know we were discussing this as well, is that because of how an elite defender he is, he's one of the best defenders in the first round of this draft. A lot more teams are interested in getting him and perhaps might be, you know, figuring, you know, deciding about moving up in the draft to get Derek Lively. So I know on the show, you guys were kind of talking about him towards the, you know, back end or at least the mid to late first round, but you know, who knows, this draft can have outside of the first pick. Everyone knows who the first pick is going to be. I know we'll talk about him in a minute, but after that, there's a lot of intrigue about this draft, way more intrigue than we thought we would have a few weeks ago. So, and Derek Lively is going to be a big part of that. So, you know, don't be surprised to see his name being mentioned early on as some of these trade rumors and teams start dealing as the draft continues.
Yeah, when we talked to Jay, you know, I put the sort of over under. I was like, hey, is he a lottery pick or not? Does he go in the first 14 or does he go after that? And at the time I was asking Jay about it, I sort of thought, I think probably maybe he goes just a little bit after 14, just because teams don't seem, you know, as enamored with big men as they used to be in the past. But in the past few days, there have been more and more rumors that there are teams out there, and in fact, potentially including my Atlanta Hawks, my hometown team that I have season tickets to, who are really intrigued by Derek Lively, that they, you know, they see him as an immediate guy who can impact things on the defensive end of the floor, Donald, as you were talking about, but they also think that he has potential to really develop offensively. There is talk that the Hawks and some other teams are targeting like Dallas's pick at number 10, trying to maybe work a deal with Dallas. Dallas is a team that has some really great established stars and wants to bring in, you know, guys who are more established in the NBA versus a rookie. And so there's a lot of talk that Dallas may be interested in dealing that number 10 pick, and that the teams who are looking to trade into that spot are looking to trade there because they think that that's where they can get Derek Lively. I have to tell you, you know, a couple months ago, if you told me that Derek Lively was being talked about as a top 10 pick, I don't know that I would have believed that, but I'm glad that NBA teams are recognizing some of what we saw during the season, which is that this guy is such a difference maker on that end of the floor, on the defensive end of the floor. He may not be doing a lot on offense at first, but man, the fact that he can guard 1 through 5, even at the NBA level as a defender, and block shots the way he does, it's just something that the league recognizes can really be a difference maker.
I love that you guys discussed the comparison between him and DeAndre Jordan and how a lot of people are kind of using that as a diss of Derek Lively. You know, DeAndre Jordan.
Dude, DeAndre was awesome.
Simply an NBA champion right now. Like, I mean, currently on the Denver Nuggets as an NBA champion. Like, the man has been everywhere. And yeah, sure, DeAndre Jordan is not the guy I'm looking for to shooting a 30-footer. but I mean, he's ended lives in the paint with some of his dunks. And look, I'm a Pistons fan. You know, Brandon Knight is still RIP because of that, the vicious dunks of DeAndre Jordan. But if Derek Lively gets to that point where, yeah, okay, initially he starts out as a guy who can give you two or three blocks a game, can give you two or three dunks a game, including one that's probably over somebody else, and give you eight to 10 rebounds. Like, yo, you can teach the rest of that. You can teach about his game. And Jason, as you mentioned, we've seen video of him knocking down the three, that three that, you know, some of us on this show thought was going to come a little bit earlier than others. But I do think that, you know, if he's working on his outside game, that again can always improve over time, and defensive part will still stay there. Defense will get you on the court, you know, or at least your offense sometimes gets you on the court. But for Derek Lively, his defense is going to keep him on the court late in games, especially when you have some of these athletic guys going to the rim. He's proven that he can go toe to toe with some of that athleticism and still be able to cleanly defend you at the rim. So I'm really excited about his prospect. Like Jason, I don't know where he's going to land, but I do think wherever he lands, it's going to be a really, really good situation for him. And that's what I'm most excited about.
Yeah, you know, the comparison, Jay made the DeAndre Jordan comparison, which is one I hadn't really thought of. And it's a very good one. The one I keep on hearing from people who are draft analysts is Tyson Chandler, who is a guy who not a big offensive threat in the NBA. But Tyson Chandler was a guy who just protected the rim and hoovered up rebounds. And I mean, let's not forget, Tyson Chandler was NBA Defensive Player of the Year. He made multiple all defensive teams in the NBA. And this was a guy who, like you mentioned, was an NBA champion. One of his seasons, I think it was with the Dallas Mavericks, he was an NBA champion
in 2011. But also he could pick off 20, right? Like, it's not like he was a guy who was just going to give you your 4 points and 18 rebounds. He could go for 20. He could hit, you know, the occasional outside jumper and stretch a defense. So, yeah, it's one of those things where, again, he came in, and his was a little different because Tyson Chandler came out of high school. And so, but he still had the same kind of upside and potential that a lot of people see in Derek Lively. And I think that's the key here.
Yeah. Hey, let's move on to the other thing then. And we teased it up, and we spoke to Jay about this as well. Victor Wembanyama. Donald, what do you think? Is this guy an immediate, you know, this is my big question to Jay. The big thing I want to know about Wembanyama is he immediately an impact player in the league, or does it take him a little more time?
I think the question of whether he's going to be impact player, I don't think there's a question there. I think individually, I mean, I've seen a lot of his game over the last 2 years. This man is one of the greatest basketball prospects I've ever seen. I'm not going to, you know, and that's not hyperbole. I know people are talking, you know, greatest player, you know, prospect ever, or since LeBron James, or since whoever. This man is the real deal. And the fact that in the time that I've seen him, he's grown 6 inches, and he was 6'11 when I first saw him play. Like, this man is a cyborg slash freak of nature. Now, will he be an impact player for the Spurs? That remains to be seen, because I do think in the NBA, you're going to need more than just one guy to really revolutionize a team. But I do think this is a very, very big piece. And like you said, Jason, a lot of teams, I mean, look, my Pistons literally tried to tank an entire season to get him and failed, because everyone understands what kind of game this guy can bring. But I think in San Antonio, you know, pairing him with, you know, Trey Jones and the young guys that they do have, it's the start of something special for San Antonio. And I think they should, you know, all Spurs fans should be excited about that. But also the NBA should be excited about this, because I do think he's going to be a player we're going to be thinking about and hearing about and seeing for a very long time.
Look, I think anyone who's skeptical about this guy hasn't really looked at the tape, and they especially haven't looked at, I saw this guy play against the G League Ignite. And let's be very clear. There are a lot of young players on that G League Ignite team, but there are also a number of players who have been in the NBA or are sort of fringe NBA kind of players. I want to remind everybody that when Victor Wembanyama played that G League Ignite team, he put up 36 points with 11 rebounds and 4 block shots. And he did that like in consecutive games. Like it was clear. Like he did it in the first game, you're like, wow, this is unbelievable. And then he did it in the second game, you're like, oh, okay, this is what he is. So playing against guys who are basically like almost right there on the cusp of being in the NBA, he's effortlessly putting up a double-double, 30 plus points.
and blocking shots, just like, you know, there's nothing to it. This Jason, dude is going. Yeah. Yeah.
This is a guy who in the course of a game, he shot a 30 footer, missed it, and alley-oop tip dunked it, his own miss from like 15 feet. Like, ain't nobody doing that in the NBA, much less anywhere else on this planet Earth. And I think that's why people honestly need to get excited. It's not just the fact that he's 7'5 and just a freak shooter or anything like that. He's a freak athlete. Like, people talk about him being Giannis and LeBron and at age 18. They talk about him being all these guys, and all these guys that they refer him to are some of the greatest players that this game has ever seen. And so if you're talking about this guy already rolling to one, oh yeah, and he's still growing, he's 7'5". Like, it's amazing what he's already accomplished, and it's amazing to think about what he could accomplish in the NBA just from that alone. So I think, yeah, it's so exciting to watch from a standpoint of him. I'm thoroughly disappointed that he will not be in a Pistons uniform. But that's just, I have to deal with that. That's just me.
Hey, the last thing I want to mention really quickly is there's a lot of talk. And look, what I'm about to say may be dated in a matter of minutes because NBA trades come at any moment. But we should mention that we are on the lookout. There's a lot of talk that Zion Williamson could be traded, that the New Orleans Pelicans are a little frustrated with some things about Zion. Obviously, his health has been a huge, huge, massive issue that has clouded, overshadowed all the amazing things he's accomplished already in his brief NBA career, and that the Pelicans maybe are ready to move on from Zion and trade up toward the top of that NBA draft, not number one, but perhaps trade to number two or number three, and that they're ready to move on from the Zion era. So we're going to be on the lookout for that, Donald. I don't know if you have anything to say about it or if it's just something that we want folks to be aware of as we approach the NBA draft.
No, it's interesting how quickly that has turned and how many teams, you know, Jason, you pegged it right when you said that nobody is calling San Antonio about the first pick, but almost the entire NBA is calling, Charlotte right now,
yeah,
about the number two pick. And this could be an interesting scenario because we know about Zion Williamson playing his high school days in Spartanburg, South Carolina, but he grew up in Charlotte, and he was born and raised in Charlotte and ended up going to Spartanburg for high school. So this is a homecoming of sorts if this is to transpire. But also, I think Charlotte is not the only team trying to acquire Zion. And, you know, the Pistons have been out there looking at trades. I think I'm thinking like other bigger teams like the Heat and the Knicks have kind of figured out what they could package together. So it seems pretty certain as of this point, 3:09 p.m. on the East Coast on Tuesday, January 20th, that Zion Williamson will not be a Pelican come the end of the NBA draft. But it's going to be interesting to see what they do with him, how many picks they get or whatever, but also if they move up to get Scoot Henderson, if that's really what they're after here. And if they don't, if they're not able to make a deal with Charlotte, does he stay a Pelican? I think there's a lot of questions here. And then also, Jason, I think just offhand, look at the Boston Celtics. They have a lot of questions that they have with their free agency. Do they keep Jaylen Brown because he's about to sign a Supermax deal? They're about to give Jason Tatum a Supermax deal. And a lot of people think that they may have some moving pieces moving around. So there's going to be some dookies involved in this draft, not just Derek Lively and Derek Whitehead. So, of course, Jason, we will give them all the recap once all the dust has settled. But it makes, again, like I said, for a draft that 6 weeks ago didn't feel like it was going to be really intriguing, it's become very intriguing over the last couple of weeks with all these trade movements and rumors going around.
Right. So the NBA draft coming up Thursday night, and we will be back with you very, very soon after that to talk about what happened to Whitehead, what happened to Lively, what happens to maybe other Dukies who are on the move, whether it's Zion or someone else. For Donald, I am Jason. Again, we're sorry that Sam could not join us here on this edition of the podcast. And we have to again thank our good buddy, friend of the pod, Jay Billis, for joining us and breaking down all draft things that we asked him about. Please like and subscribe to the Duke Basketball Roundup. And always don't forget, go to our Linktree. We want you going to our Linktree, clicking on those links. We have a whole bunch of different affiliate relationships there. It's one of the ways you can support us while you are acquiring the coolest Duke gear out there that you can show off your Duke fandom. So again, for Donald and Sam, I'm Jason. Thanks again. Here's the Duke Band to play us out and take us home.